Hello, world. Or should I say happy Friday? Damn it, it's about that time. My Boston Celtics, the team I won the championship, they lost last night on their home court. We gonna get to that. We got the Denver Nuggets in Minnesota. They going up, the Minnesota Timberwolves on the verge of sweeping, okay? Sweeping the Denver Nuggets. We got my sister Shanae in the building. My big bro Stephen A in the building. We got Molly, the PG in the building. We ready to rock on this Friday morning, damn it. Holla at your boy! Woo!
My girl's back in town. Today, how we doing?
Scare the boys away with all this facts and knowledge.
How we doing?
We're doing happy Friday.
Happy Friday. Kendrick Perkins, good to see you. I feel like I haven't been on television with you in a minute, so great to have you. And of course, Steve.
What's up, Molly? What's going on?
How we doing, guys?
What's going on? What's going on? What's up, Big Perk? Not bad. Chinny.
Yes.
How you doing?
Thank you.
How you doing?
What about Ray? How's LA treating you, Stephen A?
I'm out here doing busy things, just taking care of business. That's all.
Busy
doing
things.
What I have to do.
Busy things. Okay, we'll leave it at
something
that.
Something like that.
Let's get into the playoffs, guys. The Cavs blew out the Celtics 118-94 last night to tie up their series at one. Donovan Mitchell had 29 points, including a monster 16 third quarter points, while Jason Tatum scored 25 points. He had a plus minus of 22. Here he is on the loss.
Nobody was in there defeated or deflated. I mean, you never want to lose, especially in the playoffs. We get it, right? The world thinks we're never supposed to lose. We're supposed to win every game by 25. And it's just, it's not going to be like that all the time. That's the narrative that you might see on TV. The idea that we have a super team. They say we're a super team, but, you know, we didn't get rewarded like we are. We know we got a good team. We're not perfect. We play the right way more often than not. And we know we got to be better. I guess saying people that are spoiled from our success, you know, we don't pay attention to those things. We just go out there and control what we can control.
All right, Perk, before I get into the debate, I just want your reaction to what you just heard from Jason.
You know what? I'm so over Jason Tatum. First of all, no one called them a super team, okay? No one expect them to win every game in the playoffs. I understand that. We understand that. But damn it, we expect you to perform and compete at home. We're talking about the team who had the best home record in the regular season. And here's the thing, right? All postseason, we've been screaming Jalen Brunson name. We've been screaming Anthony Edwards name. We've been screaming Luka name, Tyrese Maxey. He arrived in the postseason. When is Jason Tatum going to arrive? Or does he have that dog in him to arrive? Damn it, you got smacked by 20-plus at the crib with a team who I believe the Cavs, yeah, they have a good squad, but they still missing a key piece in Jared Allen. You have enough. Now, you're going to lose games, but at the end of the day, this is my thing with Jason Tatum. He talked about this in interviews. He talked about how he couldn't wait for this moment, how nothing in the regular season mattered to him. He just couldn't wait to get to the postseason. Well, damn it, it's here. What you going to do about it? What you gonna do about it? You gonna stand on business or you gonna fold like clean sheets? It's in your hands. This is your moment. This is Jason Tatum moment. When we talk about the teams that are still in the postseason right now, the only team that has that quote unquote target on their back, whether it's championship or bust, is Jason Tatum, Boston Celtics. So what you gonna do?
It's a debate show, and I wish I could have started off disagreeing with Big Perk, because that definitely would have helped jumpstart my morning. But at the end of the day, I can't. The reality is that Jason Tatum right now, you know, you consider yourself one of the best players in the NBA. You know, we consider you one of the best players in the NBA. You know what you are capable of bringing to the table. I know I'm a fan of Jason Tatum's. I don't know what the hell is going on here. These numbers that I'm seeing from him are the worst that we've seen from him in the postseason since 2019. With the expectations elevating, he seems to have taken a decline, a step back. And I think that that's the thing that needs to be said here. 7 postseason games this year, 21.7 points, 41% shooting, 27% from three-point range. What the hell is that about? That's not what we expect from Jason Tatum. You're in Boston, okay? And yeah, you're going to lose playoff games. How about losing on the road? And how about not trailing by 29 to do it? I mean, you're trailing by 29 on your home court and getting smacked around by a team that is supposed to be inferior to you. Losses happen. Even losses at home happen. 29-point deficits don't just happen, okay? That's people not showing up and doing their jobs. You already got a $300 million play on that squad, Jaylen Brown. Don't think he gets off the hook here, okay? So you got a $300 million player on the squad. You're going to be a $300-plus million player if you're Jason Tatum, of course. So that's $600 million on two players. And it's entirely plausible that as we sit here contemplating that inevitable reality, it will have that with no championship rings to show for it. What the hell are you going to do about it? And oh, by the way, can we speak about Mazzulla for a second, please? The coach of the Boston Celtics? How about him? Because let me tell you something right now. Since 2021, do you know that the Boston Celtics in 30 playoff games at home, they've split? They're 15-15. Okay? This is who they are. You can beat Boston in Boston. So I'm looking at stuff like that, and I've said it before, and I'll say it again. If Ime Udoka was the head coach of the Boston Celtics, they would be champions by now, in my estimation. I think they would have won. They might have won it last year. That's how I feel about him, because I think he's that damn great as a coach, okay? I'm not saying that Mazzulla ain't good. I'm saying he ain't Udoka. And he hasn't proven that he can be on that level because of the sporadic play. Remember, they might have lost a seven-game series. They might have came back from a 3-0 deficit against Miami last year. But how the hell you get down 0-3 in the first place? Why were you on the verge of getting swept in the first place? These are the kind of things that we've got to look at as we look at these Boston Celtics right now. So that's where I'm at with it. And I just want Jason Tatum to be better and to embrace the fact there's a bunch of young thoroughbreds coming down the pike. One is already here in Anthony Edwards. Others are coming, and they're going to render him obsolete because, as Perk has told us on many occasions, in Boston, we talking titles. We ain't talking no regular season stuff.
Yeah, Stephen A., you know, and Perk, we're all on the same page. You guys are two of, like, people that I consider my brothers here at ESPN. And honestly, I woke up and I was like, oh, I'm wearing green. And I was like, now you guys are making me question me wearing green because of how I feel right now when it comes to the Celtics. But Stephen A., you made an excellent point when you bring up Coach Udoka. The identity is the issue here. They're having an identity crisis when the games matter most the last 2 years, because if Coach Udoka was on the squad coaching this team, they take on his identity, his tenacity. We talked about when he was there that they were one of the best defensive teams. And statistically, they still are, but they are missing Kristaps Porzingis, who is top five in rim protection, but still they have a solid defense. But it doesn't feel like that's their identity. Without Udoka, I think we're seeing their identity is shooting threes. We don't see the identity being Jason Tatum balling out when you need it the most, or the identity being Jaylen Brown and him doing things together down the stretch. Like, even though those things are the strategies, it doesn't feel like we understand the full identity of the squad, because when the game gets close in the postseason, you need your star player to show up. But right now, the identity of their star player is cool, is calm, is collected. And sometimes when you're going up against an explosive force in which we saw Donovan Mitchell, you need to feel like, okay, we're down. We need to show that emotion. The guy who, Perk, you always talk about, Marcus Smart, he was that display of emotion that sort of got people reset. They don't have that identity anymore. And so to me, that's the bigger issue. And also, like, so when you look at the question, how much blame does Jason Tatum deserve? I would say it's 50-50, because oftentimes when teams, you take the identity of your star player and you also take the identity of your coach. And when your star player is cool, calm, and collected, now you're looked to at the coach. And I don't know if y'all saw this, but the Cavs had their way versus the Celtics. I mean, Evan Mobley, I said he was the X factor going into the series. A lot of people question the development, the timing of him. Look, he walked into the series, I think he had 11 points, I think 16 rebounds and like 5 blocks. I was like, without Porzingis, that man is going to do some work. They were fortunate that in stretches, that he was in foul trouble, and Tristan Thompson held it down for the Cavs. Like, they didn't have an answer for that post play and just being, you know, having that identity that the Cavs had coming in, like, we're going to work, we're going to play hard, and we feel like we're confident in our shot. So I think that's the biggest issue with the Celtics. They're a great team. You look at the threes. They were 8-for-35 from three. 77% of those threes were highly contested. That's not good. That's not good strategy. That's not good decision-making. And to me, that's the biggest question I have with them.
It would also explain why Jaylen Brown, the $300 million man, remember the show, the $6 million man, the Bionic Man, $6 million man? Damn it, it's the $300 million man. That's what we're going to start calling Jaylen Brown now. It's the playoffs. It's playoffs now, okay? So we're gonna start calling it. I ain't mad at the bag. Get that bag, but you got to show up and back it up, okay? Brown, Derek White, who's been balling up until yesterday, been balling. And then, of course, Jrue Holiday, new Mr. 4 Year, what is it, $135 million, whatever. 1-for-16 shooting from three-point range. 1-for-16. And you know what else it should tell us? Or at least force us to ask. So is that what this is about? See, when you hit your threes, you a different team. But when you ain't hitting the threes, all of a sudden you forget your athleticism. You forget your ball handling skills. You forget spacing. You forget moving the basketball. You forget all of those components that have contributed to you having the best record in the NBA, not to mention a top two defense in the league. You just forget all of that because you can't make threes? Is that what your success is predicated on? That's a problem.
So listen, here's the thing. A few things here, right? I don't want people to start getting caught up in saying, oh, this is who the Celtics are. We saw them drop one against the Miami Heat, and then they came back, and then they won the last three games. This is a different situation. This Cleveland Cavaliers team, they have their superstar in Donovan Mitchell. They have their all-star and Darius Garland, and they have veteran leaders on their bench. When you look at Marcus Morris and when you're looking at Tristan Thompson, that's number one. Number two, Richard Jefferson caught a lot of heat for saying something in the first round when he was doing the Cavs, when he was doing the Clippers and Mavs game, when he said, you know what, the team that drops game one, they come back the second game with a different mindset, and it favors, in my opinion. That went over a lot of people's head. You know why? Because you look at this series right now, and you look at the Cavs just finished fighting a seven-game series with the Orlando Magic, and then they walk into a game one, and guess what? The Celtics have been waiting on them. Now, all of a sudden, the Cavs have a little bit more time, and they're able to go in. Bickerstaff is able to go over his film in the film room, and we saw what? We saw better closeouts. We saw the ball movement. That's why they had six players in double figures. That's why Evan Mobley had 21 last night and anchoring the defense. We saw Caris LeVert. He had a 21 piece. This is not the Miami Heat without Jimmy Butler. This Cavs team is undefeated at home. The Celtics better walk lightly when it comes down to playing this team.
One other key point before we move on to our next subject. Donovan Mitchell. That brother that I still have not forgiven Phil Jackson when he was running the Knicks for not drafting, and instead he drafted Frank Ntilikina.
That Donovan Mitchell,
who showed up with the 16 points in the third quarter last night, dropped 29 points. The Cleveland Cavaliers are 27 points better than the Boston Celtics in the first two games of this series when Donovan Mitchell is on the floor. They're 28 points worse when he's off. That's a 55-point difference.
Ooh. Yeah.
Donovan Mitchell.
Major.
Just saying.
Major.
Just saying.
All right. Well, game three is tomorrow at 8:30 on ABC. We'll see which Celtics team shows up. Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2X miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits, like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore his seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Guys, let's go to the West now. After the Suns were swept out of the playoffs by the T-Wolves, Phoenix fired coach Frank Vogel on Thursday afternoon after one season as a coach. Vogel had 4 years left on his contract. Meanwhile, Kevin Durant has had four coaches the last four seasons. Hasn't worked out with any of them. In fact, none remain with the team who hired them, and the Suns are seeking their third head coach in as many seasons. So, Stephen A., here's what I want to dive into here. Do you feel like Vogel got a fair shot with KD and the Suns?
No, but look, there's a few things that I'm going to say this morning that's going to be very, very unpopular. When I give a damn, I'll let you know, but it needs to be said, so I'm going to say it. Put Kendrick Perkins and Chiney up on the screen for me, please. Let me tell y'all something. Number one, Frank Vogel did not get a fair shake. Who the hell said he deserved one? He was not the first choice for the job. They wanted Ty Lue. Am I lying, ladies, gentlemen? They wanted Ty Lue. You understand? Okay. So you weren't the first choice. I'm not even sure if you were the second choice. So knowing that and coming into that situation, fresh off of getting fired from the Lakers job, you knew what the situation was. My boy Jeff. My man Jeff Brown out here in L.A. Everybody know my brother Jeff. What does he say, Molly? Fair is a place where they judge pigs. It doesn't exist. It's what he says. It's what he says all the time.
Big people just say life ain't fair. You know?
That's what he says. Fair is a place where they judge pigs. It doesn't exist. Frank Vogel knew what the situation was. I respect the hell out of Frank Vogel. I'm sad for him. I don't want him unemployed. He doesn't deserve to be an unemployed coach. I get that. But the flip side is when they give you Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and Devin Booker, here's what they didn't expect: to get swept in the first round. Coming off a regular season in which you were the worst fourth quarter team in the entire NBA. I mean, they gave up double-digit leads like they was giving out, they were giving out Jolly Ranchers. I mean, it was ridiculous. You understand what I'm saying? This is what they were doing. And so when you're giving up leads throughout the regular season and then it's accentuated and punctuated in the postseason because you can't win a game, you got to go. You got to go. Okay? That's what happened with Frank Vogel. Now let me get to Kevin Durant. I think Kevin Durant is one of the greatest players this game has ever seen. Here's what Kevin Durant and all those close to him are going to have to accept. The finger of blame is now going to come in his direction. Even though he All-NBA, even though he averaged damn near 28 a game, even though we know when that buzzer sound tip-off time arrives, that brother going to ball on an elite level, better than 98% of the league, if not more. He's that dude as a talent. What about a teammate? Got to start asking this question. Here's the reason why. Here's what we're saying, and I challenge anybody covering the NBA, ain't talking about players that ain't gonna lie on his behalf. I'm talking about people covering the NBA. How many times do we keep hearing reports? He's never happy. He's always miserable. No matter where he goes, it's gonna be a situation where he's not happy. He distances himself from other people. When he was in Golden State the last year, he ain't talked to nobody but Bob Myers. He talked to nobody else. This is what they say. I'm not there. I can only tell you what they're saying. He ain't talked to nobody but Bob Myers. He goes to Phoenix. They were talking about he was barely talking to his teammates, Booker and Beal and everybody else there. Now, he's not a bad person. Nobody's saying he did something wrong to other people, but he purportedly goes into a shell and distances himself from everyone else until it's time to play. Well, how are you going to lead? Guess what? You're not going to lead. And if you're not going to lead, that means you ain't a leader. And if you ain't a leader, well, who the hell was the leader on Phoenix? The answer's nobody, which is why the coach is fired, which is why they were home, which is why they were more visible at F1 in Miami than they were on the basketball court. Mm. That is a fact. Floor's y'all's.
Woo! Was that Stephen A or was that Brick? Because that was a soap opera and I was tuned. You were doing your thing.
General Hospital.
Oh, it's okay. There we go. So to break down what you just said, and I think, you know, a lot of times it feels like we're indicting people's character at times when you say a person can't lead. I don't think that's the same thing. I don't think every player is meant to have that type of galvanizing force, whether it is LeBron James or even Steph Curry, who leads with how he plays. Like, Kevin Durant is a product of a generation in which if you were the great talent, a superstar, that type of dynamic player, the expectations is that you are a leader. And I'm not saying that he's not a leader, but what I am saying is that he's more so looked to be a compliment in his career. But we put that leadership label on him where we play with a lot of guys that just want to show up and hoop and that are super talented scoring the basketball. And I think when you are part of that generation and those expectations, that's why we always talk about these things like leadership and characteristics of KD. Whereas now we understand guys that just are built. They have teams. Look at Jason Tatum that we just talked about in the Boston Celtics. Brad Stevens was the executive of the year because he designed a team knowing that he needed to support Jason Tatum with as many top players as necessary, because maybe you're not going to get that pool, put the entire team on your back from that same player. So I think KD's a little different than those of his generations, and I think we've misdiagnosed who he is as a player to this point. But when we talk about how coaching impacts, and Perk, you don't agree? Because I know you've always said that KD is not capable of leadership. I'm just saying I have played with countless people that are not as demonstrative as of leader.
But I'm not saying he can't.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not saying he can't lead. Janae. I'm saying he doesn't. There's a difference.
Well, in my point of view, I think this team is not necessarily designed in the way that he thought it was going to be, because he came to play with Devin Booker, and then they hemorrhaged the entire squad when you brought in Bradley Beal. If you look at the timeline of everything, at the end of the day, when it comes to Frank Vogel, I don't think he got a fair shake, because as someone who looks at the construction of this team, based off of it being so top-heavy, that is not what wins right now in the NBA. You talked about the fourth quarters. Even though you have three great offensive players, as you mentioned, those fourth quarters, they struggled. And then in the postseason, that big three was minus 51. There were problems. I don't know if this was the intention of the team construction being this way by KD, but I'm saying he went out there. He probably played the most amongst the big three, and he did do a lot of great things. Now, when you point the finger, the first person to go is typically the coach, and to me, that is unfair. I think the big issue, you said he distanced himself when it comes to leadership. I think instead, he should have just doubled down instead instead of dipping. We see a path of dipping. That doesn't mean he's not a great player and that he's not capable to lead through his play. It just means his personality is much different.
Go ahead, Perk.
Well, Sinead, I understand your point when it comes down to franchise players being leaders, because all franchise players are not leaders.
Exactly.
But in this instance, it's different for Kevin Durant. You want to know why? Because he left Golden State and Steph Curry. We probably would have about four championships and another finals MVP. So when you leave and then you go to Brooklyn because you want your own setting and you want to team up with Kyrie Irving, and then that don't work out after bringing in James Harden and you having a big three there and having one of the biggest failures in NBA history, now you get traded to the Phoenix Suns where you're with Devin Booker. And let me remind you, CP3 was there. So if Kevin Durant didn't want to be uncomfortable and take a leap as far as his leadership role, then why didn't they do everything in their power to keep CP3? You know why? Because CP3 was going to hold Kevin Durant responsible on the professionalism side. That's why. And so all of a sudden you bring in Bradley Beal, and so now Kevin Durant, we're asking you to get uncomfortable. You're a two-time NBA champion. You're a two-time finals MVP. Like, it's okay to get uncomfortable. We're not asking you to go scream in guys' faces. We're asking you to do just enough to hold guys accountable to be an extension of Frank Vogel. But now, all of a sudden, when you don't respect Frank Vogel and you don't talk to him for the last 2.5-3 months, then that sends a signal to the rest of the team that they don't have to respect Frank Vogel. And so this Frank Vogel firing was a business decision. It was either Kevin Durant or Frank Vogel. And we knew what the Phoenix Suns were going to do. Frank Vogel was out of the – I believe Frank Vogel, his resume speaks for itself. He's an NBA champion. He did some remarkable things when he was with Paul George and the Pacers, and he did not get a fair shot. He wasn't the one that had to close out on shooters. He wasn't the one that had to slide those puppies, and he definitely wasn't the one that was getting that work put on him and getting his noise talked to him while Anthony Edwards was busting they behind. At some point, you got to have a level of accountability, and we're lacking that right now in the NBA.
There's no question about it. I'm not disagreeing with that. But let me go back to the Frank Vogel thing because this epitaph and this, maybe I got to call Dr. Phil or something. And I don't want to hear all that. You know, I get the fact that, you know, the players have to go out there and play. They have to go out there and perform. I totally understand that. What I'm saying, however, is as the coach, what the hell is your job? Your job is to get them to do it. If the players, if we just going to look at players and say this is what they're supposed to be doing, regardless of the coach, then what the hell you need a coach for? You ain't playing. Do you really, really think that a coach is hired in today's game just to do X's and O's? It's about galvanizing the troops. It's about having things set schematically. It's about positioning yourself and your team to literally achieve its goals to the maximum of their abilities. If we looked at the roster and we said it ain't good enough. We're looking at Tom Thibodeau right now, Coach of the Year candidate as far as I'm concerned. Look at the job he's done. You know why? It's not just about the greatness of Jalen Brunson. It's what he seems to be peeling from everybody. And if Frank Vogel couldn't do that, he does have some level of culpability. Now, here's where Kevin Durant has it. You go to Golden State. Last year there or so, they said he barely spoke to Steve Nash, if at all. Steve Kerr. You decide to depart from Steph Curry to join Kyrie. You don't want the smoke that comes with New York, so you go to Brooklyn. And by the way, you sign off ultimately on embracing a guy in Steve Nash, great guy, great player, the whole bit, but never coached on any level in his life. That doesn't work out, okay? You move on from there because Jacques Vaughn is there and all of this other stuff. You move on from Brooklyn, and now you in Phoenix with Frank Vogel, and in two of the last 3 years, Kevin Durant, one of the greatest players we have ever seen, is getting swept. And by the way, We bring up LeBron getting swept. LeBron got swept in the Western Conference Finals last year. Kevin Durant got getting swept in the first round. I mean, yo, what are we supposed to do? You got to look at both of them.
Yeah, but that's Sinead, let me go back to your point when you were talking about, you know, Frank Vogel getting his troops ready to play. But you also, your star player and your superstar player, your franchise guy, he's supposed to embrace that. So, you know why a guy like Tom Thibodeau is able to have those guys ready? It's because Jalen Brunson has his back 100%. You know why Coach Finch is able to do what he's doing right now with the Minnesota Timberwolves? Because he have a leader in Anthony Edwards that he can hold accountable that's gonna ripple down to everybody else. Do you know why the San Antonio Spurs had so much success? Because Greg Popovich could meet Tim Duncan at half court in a timeout and get on his behind, and everybody will follow after that because of the level of accountability that Tim Duncan was being able to, Greg Popovich was being able to have on Tim Duncan. That matters. So when Kevin Durant distanced himself from Frank Vogel, what was Frank Vogel supposed to do?
He's a fall guy, but I do want to go back to the actual game, because if you watch those first few games in Minnesota, I mean, they ran into... You see what they've done to the Denver Nuggets. KD was trying to be aggressive. I always point out, after All-Star break, he looked around, he looked to his left, and he looked to his right, and he was like, well, this is not coming in the way I need to. So he upped his field goal attempts to try to be more aggressive. I know that that's not loud, that's not sexy, but his game tried to do it. They trapped him. He tried to pass. He tried to score. Devin Booker was a little bit with a slow start in game one. Now you go back home and you expect more energy in the game in which they got, you know, they left and got swept. You saw a little sights of it, but like the energy and the attempt was there. You do need that buy-in from coach. But the reality is this team was not constructed well. You're looking at an NBA where you have a superstar and a team perfectly tailored around it. And that might have been the mistake of KD choosing, you know, this type of pathway where it doesn't work anymore based off of the luxury tax, the apron. Like, you can't win this way anymore. And it feels like he was too late to that type of party. Understanding.
Their salary is at $209 million. And the luxury tax penalty is at $116 million.
Exactly.
And you're going home in the first round without a playoff win. Last time I checked, this is business, y'all. Does that make business sense to y'all?
No.
No.
I'll leave it at that.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. When you're on a business trip, you know what goes completely off the rails? Your workout routine. Especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups, sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or you just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up, power your buys, your tries the right way, or de-stress with a little cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Time for a quick take. 13K plus came to watch Indiana Fever's Caitlin Clark win her preseason home debut. She scored 12 points. Andrea, your reaction just to all this?
Well, it's the effect of Caitlin Clark. You said 13,000 fans showed up, but the number that you forgot to mention, Molly, was the Indiana Fever averaged 4,000 fans last season. So you've got more fans coming to watch this preseason game. Not only are they coming to watch Caitlin Clark, but they get to watch Nelissa Smith. They get to watch Aaliyah Boston. Eyes on Caitlin puts eyes on everybody. This league is so tough. This league is so talented. People are going to fall in love with it. Go for Caitlin, see what she does, and see if she can have success. Fall in love with Caitlin and everyone in this league because it's top notch.
Unbelievable. Let's highlight it again. A preseason game.
Right.
All right, to the NBA we go. The NBA suspends Bucks Patrick Beverly for 4 games. The suspension is without pay. Beverly threw a basketball multiple times at fans and had what the league called an inappropriate interaction with ESPN producer Melinda Adams after Game 6 of Milwaukee series against the Indiana Pacers last week. Indianapolis police announced Wednesday that they've opened an investigation into an NBA player and citizen altercation. Police say they'll present the case to the prosecutor's office once their investigation is concluded. Andrea Carter in the house. Hey, hey. Great. I love having Andrea and Chinee on the East Coast. Like, we keep them over here. Perk, and you know how I feel about having you here, but I know I can't win that battle, so I'm just going to leave that alone. And Stephen A., you're worldwide Stephen A., so it is what it is. Essay, more appropriate punishment, Patrick Beverly or Jamal Murray?
Who? Perk, go
you,
ahead.
Stephen A. No, I said Stephen A.
Oh, you.
Yep. I'm sorry. More appropriate punishment?
Punishment.
Was definitely,
Patrick Beverly. Okay, go ahead.
It was definitely Patrick Beverly. It was definitely Patrick Beverly. Actually, he's lucky it wasn't more, to be quite honest with you. But at least there was a suspension. Jamal Murray, I was glad that he was not suspended because I don't want any excuses. I want you on the court fully loaded for game 3 tonight. Let's see whether or not you're going to handle your business against the Minnesota Timberwolves. These young thoroughbreds is coming your way. I want to see what's going to go down in that regard. But the bottom line is that, you know, to get no suspension at all, to be making about $34 million and to get a $100,000 fine, you have people, even folks in the league office, who raised an eyebrow over that because of the leniency that Adam Silver exercised here. And so you got to look at it from that standpoint and just say to yourself, what the hell is going on? In the case of Patrick Beverly, he's very, very lucky. And I can't, again, as I articulated yesterday when it came to Adam Silver, I said, listen, he's a great commissioner. I'm very fond of him. He does a phenomenal job. He is very player friendly, okay? And the players are lucky to have him. They truly, truly are. Because had that been his predecessor, David Stern, let me tell you something, Molly. I think it would have been Mike Wilbon and I were talking last night before NBA Countdown. First of all, we both agree it would have been a minimum of 10 games. Minimum. Mm-hmm. I swear to you, Molly.
Yeah.
Patrick Beverly would have known about that suspension before he left that locker room that night. I promise you that. It wouldn't have waited until the next morning. I mean, we might have got the news officially over the news wire, whatever.
Yeah.
But he would have known that night, oh, you out of here. No question. It'd have been a minimum of 10 games. Throwing the ball into the stands not once but twice, accidentally, albeit hitting that woman in the head with the basketball, and then the guy gets the basketball from her and throws it back to Beverly, and then he throws it right back at him because that's who he meant to throw it at to begin with. You threw the ball not once but twice and accidentally hit somebody. And then after that, Melinda Adams, our producer at ESPN, you refuse to talk to her because, quote unquote, she doesn't subscribe to your podcast. He'd have been out for at least 10 games, minimum. And he'd have known within the hour. That's what once was. Adam Silver's a bit different. He's got his own style, his own approach. We all respect the hell out of him. We know what he means to the NBA and what job he's done. We know what he did with Donald Sterling. We know what he's done in certain situations that have really, really supported the players. And we applaud him for that. But there are times when you could go overboard and you could be a bit lenient. And now it's gotten to a point where the proverbial eyebrow is being raised and people are looking at him and comparing him to his predecessor because of that leniency. And that's what he has to watch out for. So I think the suspension for Patrick Beverly, neither one appears to be appropriate per se, but Beverly is more appropriate than Murray because at least there was a suspension.
That's my thought process, Stephen A. Don't you have to be appropriate before you can be more or less appropriate than something else? Neither one was appropriate. And in both situations, there were multiple actions. You just listed Pat Bev. He threw the ball twice, and then he was disrespectful to the reporter. There were multiple actions with Jamal Murray, too. It was the towel. Then it was the heat pack. It was the money sign. Three different things. Like, both punishments were inappropriate, in my opinion, because they were too light. You saw how Jamal Murray acted after his punishment was given, a $100,000 fine. That's like a drop in the bucket to him, and it showed that way when he answered questions, like he didn't even want to be asked those questions in the first place. When the punishment is too light, I don't think lessons are learned. We've also seen multiple incidents from Pat Bev. This is not the first time that he's reacted a certain way, an inappropriate way, whether it's on the court or now on the sidelines. So to me, neither punishment was appropriate, and I'd be interested to see if both players, how they respond, how they react. I do appreciate that Pat Bev apologized. I do appreciate that he called Melinda. I do appreciate how he handled it after the fact when you compare it to Jamal Murray, but neither punishment was appropriate.
Well, Jamal Murray didn't apologize. He acted like he didn't do nothing wrong. It is what it is.
Double down.
The thing, right? Yeah, here's the thing, right? And this is the problem that I have when it comes down to the decisions that are made when it comes down to decisions or fines, right? They always look at your past. Trust me, I done got called to the principal office plenty of times for doing things when I was playing, and it's always based on your past. Jamal Murray threw a heating pad at the referee that went onto the floor that could have caused an injury, especially to Carl Anthony Towns. You're supposed to be suspended. I don't give a damn what nobody has to say. And when it comes down to the Denver Nuggets and we're just looking at that game two situation, Andrea, you talked about him doing the money sign at the officials. But how about his coach, Michael Malone, running on the floor in the face of official Mark Davis? And nothing happened. Not a tech, nothing. Any other coach probably would have got a tech minimum or max thrown out the game for doing something like that. It's ridiculous. And I understand your history plays a part. I get all that. But to go to the Patrick Beverly part of it, right, let's talk about the four-game suspension. I think it was fair. I honestly think it was fair for Pat Bev to get suspended four games. Because I don't know, we don't know what was said between the fans and Patrick Beverly. I'm not saying I'm sitting up here, you know, supporting that he should be throwing balls, you know, basketballs at fans. I'm not saying that. But at the end of the day, we have had a past history of fans doing inappropriate things in Indiana to opponents. Didn't LeBron James have a fan escorted out of the arena in Indiana? I remember the time I was playing in Indiana when I was with Vin Baker, by the way, who's a great brother. Shout out to him. I think he just opened up a recovery facility down there in Milwaukee. But Ben Baker, he had an alcohol problem. It's not me telling his business. The world knows, and he actually is on a platform supporting ones who want to get help about it. And I remember when we was on the bench one time, and an Indiana fan said, hey, Ben, you want a beer? Nah, that wasn't appropriate. Like, that was a touchy situation. So I don't know what was said between Patrick Beverly and those fans. I'm not supporting him throwing the ball, but I will say his suspension was fair.
Let me say this. going back to your point about Mark Davis and Mike Malone getting in the face of Mark Davis, I loved what Mark Davis did. I loved the fact that he didn't eject him. Let me explain why. I understand that the climate has changed, okay? But the point is, one of the things that elevates a level of frustration is the inability to communicate, the inability to be emotional. When they ask for your emotion and your fervor and that fire inside of your belly in order for you to go out there and show that you care and you produce. I'm not advocating putting your hands on anybody, but again, Decisions like that should be at the discretion of the official, the coach, et cetera, et cetera. It's just some hard and fast rule that you show demonstrative behavior in any way, and all of a sudden that requires a tech, if not an ejection. I've seen players, I've seen coaches literally say, oh my God, and turned and walked away and got attacked. Now that's ridiculous. You can't do something like that. So the flexibility, what I loved about what Mark Davis did is that he showed me that the league still has the power as an officiating body to be versatile enough to pick situations that you don't have to necessarily go all in and be hard and fast with the letter of the law. You can engage in human interaction and exercise your discretion before you make the call. Now, had he done it again, Mark Davis would have rejected his behind. But at that particular moment, playoff, you get your ass kicked. He understood that the coach is losing it right now because the team is losing it. And guess what? That happens. That happens. There's nothing wrong with that.
No. It don't just happen. Look, didn't Rick Carlisle get thrown out of the game?
Yeah. Not initially. Not initially.
But he got a tech at first, right?
No, he didn't.
Yes, he did. That's why he got the second tech, and that's why he got tossed.
But what? I'm not saying he didn't get the first tech, Perk. I'm saying that he was arguing for an extensive period of time before it was given to him.
S.A., when you have to be restrained by your players, you deserve a technical foul. I don't give a damn what you say. That was unacceptable what Michael Malone did.
I'll stop with the unacceptable.
You stop.
It's acceptable. It's acceptable in the heat of competition. You of all people, as ferocious as you were, you trying to tell me that deserve attack?
And guess what? I was always, every single season, one of the leaders in technical fouls. I got punished for it.
I'm saying, did you feel you deserved every tech?
Every one of them?
Every one of them?
I didn't change.
Because you knew. Listen, because it worked for you, number one. But number two, don't sit here and tell me every single emotional reaction deserves a reprimand. Not every one of them.
I can't believe that you're really sitting up here trying to ratify and justify how that was acceptable with Michael Malone.
I got no problems with that altercation. I didn't excuse Mike Malone. I said how Mark Davis chose to handle it that particular moment. I got no problems with it. I applaud him for it.
I'll give you the final word, Andrea.
Well, Perk, you said LeBron James has had people thrown out of the arena. That's how you handle fans that are acting out of character. Get them thrown out, get them banned from the arena. And what I feel like the ref did for Michael Malone, he knew Michael Malone wanted to get thrown out, and he said, no, you're going to stay here and take this beating. I don't know if they have a chance with Jamal Murray to win the series. That's a whole nother thing. So there's that.